hubbardradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's great to be back.
I was in Florence
for a week.
Uh-huh.
And so I was watching all the technology over there.
Yeah, I know. This is purely business.
It is purely business. Mm-hmm. And so it was. So first thing, I was walking around Florence, and the this is the first time I've been to Florence with an iPhone.
Okay.
So I downloaded the walking app for Florence.
Oh.
And you just select item you're going to go to, and there's a little compass, and it shows you the direction of the item. You just can walk around.
No kidding.
It's actually quite convenient, and they've got, you know, I use Google Navigation walking around, just mm-hmm. walking around Florence, and so it was actually quite nice. And then you watch everybody. Almost all the pictures are smartphones.
Really?
There are hardly any of these, you know, big cameras.
The stereotypical tourist with the camera around their neck. Yeah, you don't see any of that anymore.
Everybody's got a smartphone. And the other thing is you go to a sidewalk cafe in Florence. You know, you've got you look across the piazza. There's the statue of David. It's a replica. The real one is in the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting there in this great environment. And people are sitting there looking at their iPhones, checking their email, not talking. I'm thinking, man, this has really changed life because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, the only disadvantage is the GPS system and the camera eat up battery life fast.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest challenge in Florence was to keep my iPhone charged.
Now, you need a different charger over there, right? Because they have a different wall plug?
Yeah, you just have an adapter.
Oh, okay.
I got a whole bag full of adapters, so yeah. you just have a different adapter, and of course, the transformer on the iPhone, it will handle either 220 or 110.
Oh, no kidding.
So you don't need a voltage converter, you just need...
So the little white cube will plug into whatever adapter
you have an adapter, it's got a different kind of prong system, so that wasn't a problem.
Doc, as universal as electric is, why can't the world agree on one wall socket?
Oh, no, what you're asking is, why doesn't Europe agree with the U.S. standard?
No, I'm truly. If there was something better, why wouldn't we adopt it? Well, we're not that way over here.
No, it turns out it's like a matter of national pride. That's like saying why don't the Italians use U.S. dollars? I mean,
that's a good point.
They want to have their own connector, and if you don't like it, you can make yours like theirs. I mean, that's. Mm-hmm. So that is the thing. But it was interesting to see how technology sort of had imposed itself there in Florence. And there was free Wi-Fi everywhere.
Oh, that's cool.
So you could actually get free Wi-Fi around. And
But you guys still got to be careful over there. Do you need to be more careful, certainly in certain foreign countries, using Wi-Fi systems?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't do anything.
Same rules apply?
Yeah, the same rules apply. Because you could sit there with a password picker-upper. That's a technical word for a piece of software. You could sit there. Well, this is tech talk for just the average guy.
Exactly right.
And so you could sit there, at a Starbucks or someplace, and you could just grab all the passwords. So actually, when I am on travel, I do zero online banking.
Yeah.
And I never check my email unless I've got a secure location. But what you do is that if you get Wi-Fi, so the advantage of the Wi-Fi is that you can download stuff. You don't need bandwidth because I didn't change the SIM card in myself. My iPhone is, of course.
You have a bag of SIM cards too, don't you?
I have a bag of SIM cards. Yeah, and so I've got Verizon iPhone, which of course is dual dual system. It's got CDMA as well as GSM.
Mm-hmm.
And Verizon will actually unlock it for you.
Huh.
So I could have put in a new SIM card, and then I could have made calls over there for a couple of cents a minute. I could have gotten a SIM card with a data plan. But it was just too much work, and occasionally somebody may want to call me or text me. So I decided to leave my SIM card in and buy the data plan. So the data plan was $25 for 100 megabytes, which for, you know, regular email is fine.
For like a year, what were you there, a week?
A week. And I ended up using two loads of that. So I ended up using $50 worth of data.
And, I mean, you're good for that.
I can handle it. Now, what I did before I left, I transferred money from the operating account over to my Verizon account so I could cover my data plan. But you see, the thing is, if you take an upload, like if you set up PhotoStream, mm-hmm. and you're uploading and you're sharing your photos with other iPhones,
that's eating up
you
all
will
kinds.
Just eat up your bandwidth. Mm-hmm. Well, you can set up PhotoStream and other bandwidth heavy applications to only transmit when you're in Wi-Fi. So that's what I would tend to use Wi-Fi for, that kind of thing. And but it was a very very pleasant trip. But I am glad to be back.
It's good to have you back.
And
hey, speaking of walking apps, do you use Nike Plus?
No, so I don't have that.
You can actually figure out how many footsteps you took in a particular trip, how long you went, how many calories you burned. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Especially if you're walking around Italy all day eating pizza.
Well, I wish I would have had a Fitbit because actually I think I probably walked 9 or 10 miles a day.
You're kidding? Really?
You walk everywhere.
No kidding.
Because you just don't take a – you just walk everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you go someplace that's a couple of miles away, then you walk all around, then you walk up to the top of the Duomo, which is like 450 steps.
Uh-huh.
So I got a lot of exercise.
Good.
Offset by eating twice as much as I would normally eat.
And lots of pasta.
Lots of pasta, because it tastes so good. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, you don't realize how good fresh-made pasta is.
I wish you could see his face. He's really serious about this.
That's right. It was really quite nice. So I did enjoy that. And while I was there, I decided to look at some of the history. So I looked at where Michelangelo was born, with his mm-hmm. house. Pretty nice house. Also where Dante was born.
Mm-hmm.
So but while I was gone, we got a huge number of...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yeah. He couldn't wait today.
I know.
He
would just want. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
But he still doesn't help me pick up the mailbag.
No, he won't. That's never going to happen.
I know. You know, the other thing that I was there in Florence is still on my mind. The how technology changes it. Of course, you know, Dante was there and he wrote the Divine Comedy in the 1300s, and so I decided, okay, I should read the Divine Comedy while I'm in Florence. It only seemed appropriate. So with my iPad, I just downloaded it. I mean, it just actually makes things so easy. I don't know. I think I got Florence on my head right now.
No, I can imagine it will be. I think I sense there will be a Stratford University Florence campus at some point.
Yeah, I think that could look. And there's some very nice buildings there.
We may have to do some remote broadcasts from there, I think.
That's right. It could mm-hmm. be quite a productive location. We got an email from Christy. Dear Tech Talk, I let my son play with my iPhone. Uh-oh, that's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
He deleted the message icon. This is for text messages.
Yep.
And I don't know how to get it back. There's no way to undelete it. I can't find it. You can't go to the App Store and unload it. It's just nowhere. Please help. I need to get it back.
I didn't know you could delete that icon.
You can delete the icon, but the application is still loaded.
On the phone,
but the icon's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Christy, you can't undelete the message icon. There's no way to do that. But your program's still installed. You have to restore the icon by resetting the home page.
Right, yeah.
So go to Settings, and then go to General, and then go to Reset. Now, be careful what you pick on Reset. You could erase your whole phone.
Mm-hmm.
There is one item under Reset called Home Reset. It's called Reset Home Screen Layout. Click that one, and that will restore all the icons that are default on the iPhone to their original location, which means they're going to kind of move around. Now, all the applications you've installed will stay there. So you might find that some of your, you know, like some of your things will move around and you'll have to set it up again. But at least all of the default icons will be there and ready to use.
That's good to know.
See, really the only way to get back the message icon. Actually, it took me a while to figure that one out. because I it's never happened to me before.
Well, that, you know, I see that. I've seen that under general settings, and I thought, man, I really don't want to hit that because I'm going to lose all the other stuff that I.
So you click reset, and then there's a whole list of about 10 or 12 things. So you can
just reset that one particular.
So
icon.
The reset at the bottom, which you know, if it's going to reset the phone, you don't want to do that. It goes to a list of things, and you can reset the whole phone, but you don't have to. So
good.
That was actually quite a good question. I learned something researching that one out. We got an email from devoted listener in Bethesda. Oh, devoted listener.
Devoted listener.
Dear Dr. Schertz, I need to identify a software app that lets me build a custom library, a custom dictionary of disallowed terms. Once this list of custom disallowed words is built, I need to compare it to a PDF document or a Word document and have all the disallowed words highlighted. So we can, you know, go back and edit them or change them. Now, I've painfully learned that Microsoft Word won't let me do this, but I need to find another way. I really can't afford a Cadillac app, but could you please name the best tool that you think would be good and a few alternatives? Thanks, devoted listener. Well, devoted, I actually couldn't find very many, but I did find one option for you, and it's called Batch Word Highlighter 3.0. It's a shareware program. It's $49. You can download it from the web. And you go to batch-word-highlighter.com. I'll have the link on the website. Or you could just Google Batch Word Highlighter 3.0. And this will actually take a Word document, and it will highlight everything which is in the list of words that you want to have highlighted. You can put in a list that will highlight them all. And then you can go in and edit them. It's really the best I could find for you. Now, beware, I haven't tried it. I've just sort of checked it out. And so if it works, let me know.
Yeah,
so
you'll be part of the research arm.
That's right, so I have a data point. We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, my tech guy, I'm hoping you might pull a rabbit out of your hat and solve my current iMac and HP printer handshake dilemma. I've got an HP Jet Office Jet all-in-one GS85 printer, which was actually, it was about 85 years old.
85 no, years old?
No, sorry. It's about 15 years old. It's about an 10 to 15-year-old printer. And it works fine. But I'd like to continue using it. Now, I've owned my iMac since January 13th, and I've got a working HP Office Jet all-in-one. It's hooked to my Dell Inspiron, which I hardly use anymore.
Yeah.
But then when I tried to hook it up to my iMac, I couldn't get it to work because the print drivers that HP has released for this model only go up to OS X 10.4, and I think she's up to 10.6. I think she's got the latest one, maybe 10.6.2 or something. So I called AppleCare, and they said I should download the basic print driver for the deal. So they do have a basic print driver. Then they've got the expanded print driver that includes the fax function and the scan function. But if you just want the print function, that's the basic one. But I went and looked at – actually, I went to the HP site and looked this up, and you are right. They don't support anything beyond OS X 10.4. Then I did go to the forums.
She did a lot of work on this.
So I went to the forums, and the forums said that some people got the driver to work on 10.5 version, but no one got it to work on the 10.6 version, and that I could find no workaround for this at all. And the reason seems this is a USB printer. And it seems to be that some of these older printers, some of these first generation USB printers, there are problems with the USB port specifications or the standards, and that seems to be the case with the HP G85. And so as you get new and more operating systems, people are just not interested in keep rewriting the software to work around that USB standards problem. So I think you're pretty much stuck. You've got to get a new printer.
Mm.
Now, if you want to operate it with this, now, here's the thing that HP does. Their printers are kind of lost leaders, and where they make their money up is on the print cartridges.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, yeah.
The print cartridges. And so what you want to do when you're looking for a printer, it really depends on what features you want.
Right.
Now, first of all, do you want to have the whole all-in-one deal with the scanner and the fax and the printer? Most people, I mean, many people don't use, they only use the printer function, so you want to look at that. If you do high volume printing, I do a lot of high volume printing at home, and what I did, I got it so that I have three different colors. I've got, you know, the black, and then actually four colors. I've got four color thing, and so like if I just print all black, I just change the black one, or I could print all blue.
Right.
If you get the cheaper printers, the three colors are in one cartridge. So if you run out of blue, you've got to replace the whole thing. You got to replace the whole thing. And so certain high volume printers, if you print a lot, are cheaper in the long run because you're saving money on the print cartridges.
It probably makes sense when you're looking at the printer to go walk over to the cartridge section and look at the cart and see how much they are too.
Yeah,
right?
And so what you do when you calculate the price of the printer, you can look up on the website. It'll tell you how many pages you can, and you can calculate a cost per page. So you say, okay, in the first 2 years at the amount of printing I'm doing, how much I'm going to spend on cartridges. And then you can compare the sort of the total cost of ownership, say, over a two-year period to select the printer. That's how I would do it. I can't really answer the question because you didn't tell me how much you're printing.
And you'll have to excuse me because I offered a low-tech solution here. I'm assuming that she's in a store wandering around as opposed to you looking at her on a website, which would be way more efficient.
It would be a lot more efficient looking around. Now, if you basically don't print very much, you can get a printer almost free.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you can get it because they just want to give you that printer because you start eating up the cartridges. Exactly, because and they make that printer so it just burns through the cartridges and they'll sell you a lot of cartridges. So it just depends what you need. What you get, but I don't think I can help you with your G85 printer.
So send us some more info, right?
The print drivers, by the way, were dated 2005. Mm-hmm. The most recent print driver was 2005. So the most recent print driver is 8 years old.
Mm.
Kind of gives you a hint as to what the problem is. We got an email from Arnie McKechnie. He's one of our longtime listeners. Hi, Dr. Schertz. You mentioned on Tech Talk that you use iCloud for your Apple iPhone and iPad.
Nice shot.
Look at that.
Okay, if you were watching us on Home and Garden TV, you would have seen Doc with a left-handed hook shot into the trash can.
Yeah, exactly. I banked it right off the window, right in the trash can.
No, it was nothing but bag. Yeah, you didn't hit anything with the trash can.
I'm on fire today. It's too bad this isn't TV. Yeah. Well, there's our Home and Garden television.
Well, there's that, but, you know, we need an upgrade there.
You have iCloud with your iPhone and iPad. Of course, I use the iCloud. I back up my iPhone with it. I do it for PhotoStream for sharing photos. And it's just, it's very convenient because then when I get a new phone, I don't have to transfer the data. I just hook up the new phone. It automatically downloads everything from the iCloud. So it's extremely convenient. I can also share documents with it. But there are several, according to Arnie, and he's right, there are several other cloud systems where these are personal cloud systems where you say, I don't trust these guys. I'm going to set up my own hard drive and set up my own, you know, my own remote storage. And so in the old days, these were just called network address storage, NAS. But now they want to call them cloud storage, you know. And so it's just a hard drive hooked up to your local area network. But then what they do, they've organized the software so that there is a port through which you can access that hard drive through the firewall. So there'll be an external port. And there's a way to get at that hard drive from the firewall so you could actually access that hard drive when you're outside of your home from your iPhone or another computer. So you could store from within the network or outside of the network, you know, anytime you want. Now, it's really not cloud storage because there's only one hard drive. See, the idea of the cloud is that you've got multiple hard drives and there's load sharing. You don't know where it's stored. But this is just a network address storage that's remotely accessible. But for marketing reasons, they call them cloud storage. So there are several of these. There's Western Digital's MyCloud, Seagate Central, Netgear's, Centria, Lackl's, CloudBox, iOmega's, Home Media, Networked Hard Drive. What do you think of these systems? Well, these systems are actually quite good. I mean, for one thing, if you've got a lot of storage stuff and you don't want to pay $10 a month for remote storage, or you want to say back up your laptop to the, like if you had a laptop and you could, you're always hooked to the internet, you could back that up to that, you know, because I'm paying like $39 a year or something for, you know, to back up my laptop to the cloud. So you do have the advantage that you can save that a bit of money. And you also have the advantage that you know that you own the data. You're not going to have somebody hack into it. Now, most of the cloud systems that I use are highly encrypted, and it's difficult for people to get at them. But here's the thing you must be aware of. Now, you are responsible for the security and integrity of this hard drive. And hard drives fail. So if you're going to get a network address storage, you want to have what they call RAID. It's a redundant array of inexpensive devices, RAID. And so that means you've got multiple hard drives in the box, and you have redundancy. So that if one hard drive fails, you just swap in a new one, and the redundant data is copied to that hard drive, and nothing's lost. You don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. So at a minimum, your network address storage must be RAID, and the lowest version of RAID is just two hard drives where you mirror them. So you save it to your RAID device, and it's copied to two hard drives automatically. And if one hard drive fails, swap it in, and then they just copy from one to the other. That would be the first thing that I would say. You must have RAID because now you're responsible for this. The second thing is, make certain that you've got good surge protection on it because you don't want to damage the electronics. The third thing I would say is that somebody could steal it. Somebody could come to your house and say, wow, look at this nice little device.
Sure.
And it's gone. You've lost everything. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're going to have a network address storage, I'd recommend that you put it in a place where if somebody breaks in, they're not going to see it. It's going to be maybe, you know, because you don't have to have it right out on top. So those are the three things. Just beware of these issues. And then if you want to have 24/7 capability, you're going to have some sort of backup system. See, all of this cloud storage that you get, like with iCloud or with SkyDrive or with Google Drive, that's in a data center. It's fully backed up. It's 24/7, highly reliable. And the only issue is whether it's secure. And then you look at the encryption and the length of the encryption on it. But, you know, at one point, Arnie, I was walking down your path. And the ease of the remote clouds have just convinced me not to bother to do it. But that was a great question, and I've given you all the trade-offs. And so you can – I looked at all these different ones, by the way, that you had suggested. A lot you didn't give me quite enough information. A lot depends on what you want to do with it. Okay, if you want to just simply do it as a backup, then you want to make certain there's very convenient backup software there for yourself. And so if you want to do it for picture sharing, you might want to have software that's going to make picture sharing much easier, so you could give a link so people could share pictures. So I think the way you want to use this shared drive space and the applications that the vendors provide are going to also play into the choice. As long as you've got a RAID system, I don't think it matters much. Now, but if I was going to do picture sharing, I would do it on Picasa, which is a free cloud service, for instance, run by Google. We got an email from John in Woodbridge. Dear Tech Talk, I have to email some very large attachments, and they keep getting rejected by the recipient's email service. What are my options? Thanks, John in Woodbridge. Well, John, I have two standard methods to transfer large files. My first option, I use Gmail.
Yep.
Gmail can accept large attachments. I think their limits might be 20 megabytes now. We send Tech Talk shows around when we're trying to get them posted up. And, you know, a Tech Talk show after we've resampled it is around 14 megabytes. So we send Tech Talk files using Gmail, and it's really a quite convenient way to do it. Now, suppose you want to get something much larger than that. If the person you're sending to, they can just set up a free Gmail account or they can get it. But if it's something much larger than 20 megabytes, then what you want to do, you want to upload it to a cloud site. And then, or you could, if you had a network address server, you could put it on your network address server and then you could just send the link. Same idea. But you upload it to a cloud site and then you use a link and you put it in a public folder in that cloud site and then you simply send a link to the file to the person in an email. They click on the link and they can look at it right at that cloud site, or if they choose, they could download it. So the most convenient one I use is Dropbox. So after what you do, you install Dropbox on your computer, and you know, you'll set up your account, your username and password. I suggest you use a password that's hard to guess so people can't get into your account. Then you're able to then you can create a public folder that you can share. And then you create a Dropbox subdirectory on your computer. So you simply drag the file to the local subdirectory on your computer, and it's synchronized with your cloud Dropbox. So you wait a while, wait for it to be synchronized. And then you can right-click on that file, and it will give, and you say, you know, and it will give you the link. And so you can copy the link that's been assigned to that particular file, paste it in the email, and send it to them. So that works quite well.
Yes.
Now, but you want to make certain that you wait long enough so the file can be uploaded. I mean, just don't put it in there and then turn off the machine. You've got to make certain that it actually has time to upload, especially if it's a big file. Now, there are other cloud services other than Dropbox. There's Box. There's Google Drive. There's Microsoft SkyDrive. And they're all cheap up to a certain, they're all free up to a certain point, and then you've got to pay for additional storage if you want. Now, if you're primarily sharing pictures, I like to use a photo sharing site like Google Picasa or Yahoo Flickr. So there are a lot of other alternatives. If you're primarily sharing videos, use YouTube.
Yeah.
So those are your options, and great question.
Very good. And, of course, you know, you were gone a week, the mail piled up, but week's another week.
Next week's another week, and we love the email. Send an email to techtalk@stratford.edu. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/techtalkonline.
This is Saturday morning, and of course you're listening to Federal News Radio and Tech Talk, heard here every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, and now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
And this week in Profiles in IT, we're going to talk about Admiral Grace Murray Hopper. Now, she's called Amazing Grace because she did so much in her lifetime. Now, Amazing Grace Hopper was born December 9th, 1906, to Walter and Mary Murray in New York City. She got a bachelor's in arts in mathematics and physics. You know, I like these physics people. Always, have you noticed I have more physics people
on? Yes, you do.
I kind of have a sweet spot in my heart for that. From Vassar College in 1928, she got a master's of arts in mathematics from Yale and a Ph.D. in mathematics from Yale in 1934. By the way, she was the first woman to receive a Ph.D. in mathematics from Yale.
Interesting.
She actually was, I mean, one of the reasons she's so special is that she really pioneered so many, she got into so many areas that women had formerly not been in, that she made a real impact in what she was doing. Her parents always believed that a woman should be able to do whatever a man could do, and they pushed her really in that direction. As a child, she loved gadgets. She always takes stuff apart. One time, there was this one story I was reading. She took apart the family's alarm clock, And then she couldn't get it together. So then she took apart another alarm clock to figure out how the first one should go together. By the time she was finished, she'd taken apart all seven alarm clocks in the house. Now,
my dog took apart one of my alarm clocks once using her teeth. We were not able to get that one back together.
Boy. Now, get this. In high school, she played basketball, field hockey, and water polo.
Marco.
Polo.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's different. Water polo is different.
That's right. When working for a PhD, by the way, you know, I was in Marco Polo's hometown where he was born. It was in Cortula. No, it was Croatia. Cortula.
Really?
Yeah, that's where Marco Polo was born.
Marco Polo was Croatian?
Didn't know that.
He would feel like he was more Venetian because that was owned by Venice then.
Oh.
And Croatia didn't exist then, but it was a city not far from Venice. So Cortula, that was where I stood right in the house where Marco Polo was born. And that's really not even relevant to this conversation, but
that's what happens when we interrupt you. We always wind up on another tangent.
I know. At age 23, she married Vincent Foster Hopper. That's where she got her last name. They divorced in 1945, 15 years later, mm-hmm. and he was killed in World War II. She was an associate professor at Vassar College from 1931 to 1943. In 43, this is when her action with computers really began. After the breakout of World War II, she thought that she should serve her country. She was commissioned as a lieutenant and was ordered within the Navy and was ordered to the Bureau of Ordnance Computation Project at Harvard University in 1944. She became the first programmer on the Navy's Mark I computer. Now, Hopper just loved this Mark I computer. It was 8 feet tall.
Wow.
8 feet wide, and it was filled with all kinds of relays, switches, and vacuum tubes, just like that old alarm clock.
Certainly not the first laptop, it sounds like.
No, that's right. And, you know, she's famous for coining the word bug. This is sort of a, you know, an internet legend. I don't mm-hmm. know how true it is. But she found a moth trapped in a relay in the Mark II computer.
Did we talk about that?
We did.
Yeah.
That's the origin of bug.
That's the origin of a bug in the computer. Now, in 1946, she was released from active duty. She joined the Harvard faculty in the computation lab where she continued to work, guess what, on the Mark II and then the Mark III. These were probably bigger and better.
Bigger, better computers.
Bigger and better. Then she joined Eckert Mockley Computer Corporation, which was later called Sperry Rand, and helped them develop the first commercial computer, which was called UNIVAC.
Which, of course, is the same computer we use here at 3WT.
Yes,
that's
Sperry UNIVAC.
It's just getting harder
that's
and
right.
harder to find good tech support.
That's
though,
right.
Exactly.
You know, that's right. There's just one vacuum cleaner, and it's the UNIVACuum cleaner. You call it the UNIVAC, don't you? Okay, perhaps her best-known contribution to computing was the invention of the compiler in 1952. I mean, this is really quite significant, because up to that point, you'd write code for a program in assembly language or some sort of basic computer language, and she thought, wouldn't it be better if you could just write English commands and have something convert those English commands that people could understand into lines of code that the computer can understand. In other words, compile the English into machine language. So she invented the first compiler, which was an intermediate program that translates English language instructions into the language of the target computer. She was part of the Flowmatic team, which was actually trying to develop a business language so you could use the UNIVAC computer for business applications.
Mm-hmm.
Part of Flowmatic. I mean, they really needed to come up with a better name. This sounds like...
Yeah. It just doesn't flow.
But anyway, see, it kind of goes with UNIVAC and then Flowmatic. It was all in... I mean, I don't know. I think their marketing department had something to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
She participated in the work which wrote the initial specifications for a common business language, which was called Common Business Oriented Language, otherwise known as COBOL, COBOL, yes. And those specifications were published in 1959. The COBOL compiler was based on the compiler that she wrote, and she was instrumental in the development of these specifications. So she is known as the mother of COBOL.
Interesting.
She's also famous. I mean, there are a lot of stories about Grace
Murray Hopper. Amazing Grace. She loved to teach. She was a teacher. She always carried around and talked about a nanosecond. She'd carry a piece of wire that was about a foot long, and she'd say, "Well, this represents a nanosecond, since that's how far light will travel in one nanosecond, about a foot. A nanosecond is 1/1,000,000,000 of a second.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10^-9 seconds.
That's like really fast.
Yeah, it's 1/1,000,000 of a second. And so she'd carry that around. And her most famous remark that everybody remembers, I didn't really attribute it to her until I started doing some research on her. She made this on a television program that was aired in 1983, and she said, "It's much easier to apologize than to get permission."
I think a lot of people operate under that premise.
That's right. She received the first Computer Sciences Man of the Year award.
Great.
See, this was before PC. Mm-hmm. Now we say Person of the Year. But back then, no.
And by PC, you mean Man of the Year. By PC, you mean Personal Computer.
Yeah, correct. Personal Computer. That's right. From the Data Processing Management Association in 1969, she was the first woman of any nationality to be made a Distinguished Fellow of the British Computer Society. She retired from the Navy at age 65, and I have to say, she didn't want to retire, but it was just the rules.
Yeah.
And then she went on to do some additional work, but what we really remember her for is her work on the compiler and COBOL.
Now, a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, the first we always ask is, did you get rich off any of this stuff?
No, she really didn't get rich, but she had a rich life.
There you go. And she contributed.
Take that to the bank. And she contributed a lot, but I don't believe she really capitalized on any of her investments.
Is she still around? She was born in 06.
No, she died in 1992.
It's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by, more of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business, from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross. I'm the adjunct professor for messing things up and lowering academic standards on Tech Talk Radio. We just finished talking about Admiral Grace Murray Hopper, one of the few women admirals in the history of the United States Navy, and the mother of COBOL, programming language. She was also quite the gadget girl when she was young, and as a young child, she disassembled one of these. If you can tell us what that was, you will win free tickets, fine dining for two, at the Escoffi at Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church, or at the campus in Woodbridge at the Cafe Karim. If you're calling from west of New York City, the number is 877-936-9333. Calling from east of the campus at Harvard University, 877-936-9333. And, of course, for everyone else, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. The Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
I really like snow. Well, you know, I haven't had a chance to do any snow skiing. Do you snow ski, Jim?
No, I'd break my neck if I snow skied. I'm not very coordinated.
Snow ski as opposed to the other kind of skiing?
Yeah, water skiing as opposed to water skiing.
All right, yeah. I've snow skied in the past, yeah.
Yeah, I have not snow skied.
I wish I'd been there to see that.
I haven't done snow skiing for a few years, but I really do enjoy snow skiing. Get out with the wind in the mountains and just go like the breeze. It's wonderful. But the question is, with snowflakes, are two snowflakes ever alike? Now, there was a guy by the name of Wilson Snowflake Bentley who took over 6,000 photographs of individual snowflakes between the early 1880s and until his death in 1931. No two snowflakes were alike in his entire 50 years of research.
Well, at least he put his life to good use.
Now, snowflakes tend to have a six-sided geometry, and that comes from the hexagonal lattice structure of the ice molecule, which has six-sided symmetry. So most snowflakes have some sort of six-sided symmetry as they grow. But the fact is, it is true that no two snowflakes are alike. I should say no two complex snowflakes are alike. If you have a very small snowflake, maybe just made up of 10 water molecules, it would be very simple. There might be some of those that are the same, but if you get a large complex snowflake, no two are alike. Now, here's how we can analyze it. First of all, you've got three variations that occur within snowflakes. You've got variations in isotopes that can be distributed throughout the snowflake, and I'll explain that a little bit further. You've got variations in stacking faults, and then you've got variations in growth dynamics. Now, it turns out that isotopes are like you can get atoms, stable atoms of a different weight, like, say, oxygen. Water is made up of oxygen, two oxygens and one oxygen and two hydrogen, H2O. And occasionally you'll get heavy water, deuterium, which is an isotope of hydrogen, and it's basically double the weight. It has an extra neutron in the nucleus, so it's atomic weight of 2 instead of 1, which is what hydrogen is. And those are distributed about one molecule out of every 5,000 molecules that actually is deuterium. So the deuterium molecules could be distributed randomly throughout the snowflake, you see, and there are a lot of ways that could be done. In addition, am I hearing music that's coming up?
I'm trying to play Winter Wonderland piece that you're talking about snowflakes.
Now, in addition, there's also an isotope of oxygen that occurs quite often. It has an atomic weight of 18 instead of the normal atomic weight of 16. So if you take all these variations, that you would have just in isotopes, it's unlikely that the isotope distribution for any two snowflakes would be the same. I mean, so just from an atomic level, they probably wouldn't be different, or they would be different. And so that's the first variation that you probably wouldn't see very often. Now, the second variation would be in stacking faults. When a crystal grows, the molecules don't stack together perfectly. You get stacking faults, they could be distributed. And you could argue that no two snowflakes could be alike because the stacking faults would be variable. And the third variation is that there are growth dynamics. As the snowflake is falling, it's encountering different dust particles, different air, encounters with the wind, and it grows in a slightly different way because each snowflake takes a different path. So if you take all of these three factors together, someone did a calculation, and they calculated that there are more variations on the way that a complex snowflake could grow than there are atoms in the universe.
Does temperature play any role in this? In addition, if it's very close to freezing or if it's really cold?
Yeah, temperatures do a... If you got very colder temperatures, the ice crystal tips are sharper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sharper looking, more attractive.
Snowflakes that hurt when they hit you in the face.
Yeah, that's
right.
If they're big. I mean, at warmer temperatures, the snowflakes grow slower, more rounder. They have less intricate shape. So temperature does make a difference. There have been, by the way, the largest snowflake that ever fell was in Siberia, and it was almost 8 inches in diameter.
Now that would hurt.
Now I've never seen that, but. But there you go. So that is the question.
That's more like a meteor than a snowflake.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Meteor.
So Tech Talk can answer the question. Every snowflake is unique.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, heard in the Washington area, over the broadcast airwaves on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2, on the Internet worldwide at techtalkonline.com. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio.
I'm going to talk a little bit about how technology is making everyone a great photographer.
Yes.
There's kind of a theme here.
Yeah, there is.
There's kind of a theme here. So it turned out the end of May. Things have happened. The Chicago Sun-Times laid off all of its staff photographers. I don't know if you remember that.
I didn't know that.
They laid them all off because they said they're just going to use freelancers and newswires and reporters armed with iPhones. They got rid of all their photographers.
It's amazing.
They just send people out with iPhones. Now, this is not the first time traditional media has turned to untrained photojournalists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Instagram photos that NBC published after the Boston Marathon bombing, or CNN's iReport. But, you know, and so now this crowdsourced, you know, social media type of generation of photos is becoming more and more prevalent. And now for the strategy to pay off, though, camera phone technology needs to improve a bit. The problem with camera phones, I mean, they're really nice. They've got a lot of megapixels, like Nokia's Pure View sensor's got 41 megapixels, and HTC's newer sensor grabs more light, but they still suffer from one great deficiency, all of them: inadequate lenses. You just don't have a zoom lens.
Yes.
And that really does crimp the quality of your photo. So engineers need to solve the problem by putting cellular radios into the big cameras. So now, like the 16.3 megapixel Samsung Galaxy cameras, now it's got a 4G radio, and it's got a 21 times zoom. So now you can upload them automatically from the big camera. See, I know people that got like a Nikon camera. Nobody likes it because you never get the pictures off of
right.
it to upload to Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Now these could be uploaded automatically. That is sort of the latest trends. Now, editors also are going to need software to pick the best images. I mean, if you're an editor and you've got to now look through thousands of pictures to pick what the best one, that's a problem. So now there are services that can provide kind of a temporary solution. ScoopShot, which is a Helsinki software startup, publishers can send photo assignment to the service's network of 3,000 plus mobile users, and they can get photos taken right away. Stringwire, NBC acquired last August to let video producers request uplink from anyone who has tweeted near an event of interest. And what we need, though, is software that will help the editors automatically select the quality. And there's a lot of computer vision software that can do that. In a recent update, Google Plus analyzes groups of pictures for blurriness, aesthetics, and that sort of thing. And so that kind of cloud-based computing could be extremely useful. So in time, the decision that the Sun-Times did to save money may turn out to be the best decision because they'll collect things. So this is just how technology is changing everything.
Tech Talk Radio airs every Saturday right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work. and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We have a visitor.
Daddy, don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop. Make it pop.
Wow. Hello. Isn't that nice? You have your own...
I am impressed.
Well, you are host emeritus of this program. You need to be treated with respect.
Thank you, sir. Very nicely done. how are you this morning?
Good.
You got the memo on the black outfit.
Oh, yeah, I did. Right. You know, yeah. I'm trying to look good.
We're both going ninja.
That's right.
I was going to say, you guys have a Chinese Death Star.
I'm a technical ninja. Yeah,
I'm telling you, I've been using this Waze, this new W-A-Z-E, the new navigation system.
Oh, lovely.
I love it because it tells you where the speed traps are. It tells you where all of the stoplight cameras are.
You know, and the new 137 ones they put in the district?
You'd never know that this guy would have to worry about speed traps and red light cameras.
I don't worry about it at all.
Well, no, you don't.
I'm just taking care of my listeners.
What do you holler from the back of the car? Teddy, slow it down. Please.
Viceroy. Exactly.
So what happens is that it's sort of crowdsourced. So people press a button whenever they see a speed trap, and so there are just thousands of Waze users. And so you can always tell what the speed of the traffic is anywhere. It's a crowdsourced navigation system. And if there's a backup in one place, it will reroute me to another location.
He's disrespecting the tracker recorder.
He's pre-programmed, isn't he?
I know.
Yeah, just right off the bat, boom. Okay. Doc, can I just change the topic?
You can certainly change the topic.
Explain to me why the FCC is thinking about allowing cell phones on planes all the time.
I think the FCC just got tired of the airlines giving the technical reason that we couldn't have it. Because it's been bogus.
That's fine. I understand the bogus part, but this is the part. I want to be able to get on my laptop or my little tablet, or whatever you want to call it, and just check email and do stuff on my tablet. I don't want to be on a plane with 300 people all saying in unison, hey, guess where I am?
Yeah.
On the phone. Guess where I am? And, you know...
I don't want to do that. Although I have to say, used the satellite phone on the airplane. Have you ever used that satellite phone?
No,
it's in a briefcase.
You know it's in the front.
It's
built into the seat in front.
Oh, that's
of
the
you.
One that's $15,000 a second.
Dave, I called in at Tech Talk Live with the satellite phone once.
Doc, with all your dough, you should be buying everybody lunch forever.
Buy his own plane.
My phone bill for that hour was only $800.
Oh, my God. That's kind of cheap, to tell you the truth. I know it's kind of
really.
Can you see that? There's no way on an airplane you can go to the quiet car like they do on Amtrak.
An articulated airplane. That way we could have the talking section.
I see this as a revenue enhancement scam. You want the flight? No, we're going to have non-phone flights and phone flights. Can you put up with a three-hour flight with 300 people talking on the cell phone?
I do not want phone. I don't mind chat. See, I don't mind texting.
Texting,
chat. I don't mind
texting,
that at all.
Surfing,
you don't bother other people.
Internet, all that kind of stuff. Maybe they need to, you know, clarify this. Just use your laptops and everything else, but no.
No talking.
So what, please. So, sweet Zeus, no talking.
No talking.
Okay.
So what I did when I did that show for an hour, because it's
all about him. Okay. What about you, Doc?
So, well, thank you. Let's get back on the right focus here.
All right.
So I went around, everybody around me, and asked for permission. I said, you know, I got to do this show for an hour.
To talk,
you know, I said, you might, I got to do this show. It's not like nothing I can do. Is it okay? And everybody around me said, okay. And
really?
Yeah, and so then. Because,
for an hour.
It was for an hour, but because I, you know, I asked.
You were nice.
But actually, it was.
And you gave him Tech Talk trinkets, too. It was squeezy rubber bands.
Exactly right. Yeah. The stress balls.
Stress balls, yeah.
That's
the stress
right.
Ball. Shaped like a brain. Wow.
So, yeah, but I actually kind of agree with you. And I mean, and they make you turn off. Right now, you can turn off your iPad. You can't. It's stupid.
Can't listen to music.
So,
all that kind
so,
of stuff.
So one time I was on the plane. I had my iPad and I was reading an iBook. And then the stewardess said, well, and I was in airplane mode. I'm not bothering anybody. And they said, you have to turn that off to land. And so then I thought that was stupid. So as soon as they left, I opened it. I was secretly like reading it under the blanket.
This guy is, you wouldn't know.
You're a one-liner. You get it.
He's a rebel.
Okay, he is
Isn't
a rebel.
He?
And there was this woman across the aisle. She was looking at me, and she says.
From under her blanket.
She says, okay. Don't you know that you can't have that
you
on?
You can wreck the airplane.
Oh, yeah, lady.
She could crash.
Yeah,
and so she was like freaking out. So I said, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
easy,
okay, lady. Don't ease on. I'll turn it off. So then I turned it off. But of course, I just. Put down the cover. It's still on, but I can't see it. But then she was happy.
When the when the seatbelt light comes on, do you just get all... No, not me. I'm not putting this
in. No, I wear the seatbelt. Well, see, the thing is, I know pilots that use their cell phone in the cockpit. The pilots think the whole thing is stupid.
Wow. Okay.
So this is so the FCC, I think, just got fed up with the airlines blaming them for a policy that the airlines have not wanted talking on the phone for a while because they know that it bothers their passengers.
So now they're going to put it on the airlines.
Of course. So now the airlines have to say no talking, but they can't blame the FCC. I think FCC just got tired of them being blamed.
Airlines will turn this into a new revenue stream.
Now, David's point, do you see this happening? Could we now get talking and non-talking flights?
I think they'll allow texting. I'd love to have text messages while I'm up there.
Yeah.
You know, you just say, I'm about ready to land.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to turn on your cell phone and log on to a tower while you're still flying?
Doc, only you do that kind of stuff.
Do you take the Canten in the airplane with you?
It is actually quiet.
Yeah,
so actually, when you get down below about 2,000 feet,
this is research.
You can turn on your cell phone, put it at the window, and you can pick up a tower. And you can actually download your emails.
But don't you jam
from
every,
the airplane?
Don't
please
you jam?
God, don't do that when you're sitting next to me on the airplane.
He'll punch you.
I will freak out. That's why I'll freak out. Please.
When you're at that altitude, don't you jam all of the other cell phone towers within sight that you can see? Because it's line of sight communication, right?
Out. He's lost. Help him out.
Okay. But they select. There's a selection process. I go to the strongest tower, and they self-select.
And he can pick that out.
So
at 20,000 feet.
So more than one tower could.
You over there. That's the tower I want.
More than one. You know. Now when I hike to the top of Old Rag Mountain, getting back to me again.
Here we go. It's your show, though. You're allowed to do that. Listen, boys, I got to run.
Come back down, okay?
I'll try. I'll do
and then best. We'll get some string theory on for you because we know how much you like that.
Time travel. I did one show on time travel.
Doc, I still have your note from that show, and it's a good show.
And remember,
Waze.
Yeah, Waze.
Cameras, traffic.
I'm going to use it now, getting back upstairs.
W-A-Z-E.
Yeah.
It's my new favorite.
It's always talked about for the past 2 weeks.
Say hello to Mrs. Doc.
I will.
She won anything lately? Any free stuff? No?
No, she hasn't won an iPad recently. That's why I'm waiting for my upgrade. I'm waiting for the iPad Air.
Air. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the iPad Air because you know, but she's not winning anything, so I have to send her to more conferences.
Something wrong.
There you go.
I've got to send her to more conferences.
Bye, boys.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
bye.
David Burt.
We'll see you next week on Tech Talk Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as in